Chair calls the Education Finance Committee meeting in order for Thursday, February 13th. Now note, we do have a quorum present at this time, and we have two members that are remote. Representative Spencer Muir and Representative Hill cannot be with us, so they'll be here remotely. With that, just very quickly, thank you to the members that are starting to find the benefits of talking across the table. So appreciate that. Vice Chair Bakeberg, have you had a chance to review the minutes? And would you like to approve them, move for approval?
Yes. sorry. Yes, I have glanced at the minutes and approved them.
Very good. So a motion to approve the minutes. Any discussion on those? Okay. With that, Chair Bakeberg moves to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes have it, and the minutes for February 11th are approved. Members, today we will be taking a deeper dive at the Minnesota Department of Education budget. This will include the funding carried by our general fund appropriations tracking sheet, but also looking at the available funding through other non-general fund sources, including federal funds. And in your folders, you'll have several documents. The staff will go through those and explain these documents, and then we'll have the department give us a few comments. And after that, my intent is to open this up for discussion and just to have a really deep dive in that. This is really in our purview, and I think that it's important that we have a chance to have that open dialogue and really seek to understand it as we look forward for the budget ahead. So with that, if it's okay, Ms. Beckel. And by the way, if you have a chance, I suggest a nice walk with Ms. Beckel through the tunnels and ask her about her past. she has a very interesting history, and she's done a lot of things. So nice conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope in a good way.
It was. And if you know German, she'll help you with that as well. So so with that, Ms. Beckel, I'll ask you to introduce. I'll let you go ahead and get started. Which document would you like?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. I'd like to start with the longer spreadsheet. It is titled MDE Administrative Funding by Appropriation. Give you a moment to get that spreadsheet out.
And Ms. Beckel, one second. I think there's a couple of questions. Does everybody have a ruler? If they don't, we can try to make sure we have those. Perez Vega, you have yours? Okay, good. They're very helpful, so now would be a good time to...
They should be in the very back deck.
Very good. Sorry, Ms. Beckel.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. This spreadsheet should look somewhat familiar to you. It is formatted in the same way as the November forecast, as well as the governor's recommendations spreadsheet. But this spreadsheet seeks to show only the administrative funding that is relevant to each of those appropriation lines in the original spreadsheet. So you should be able to look down the program line and recognize, for example, on line 9, the Building Assets Reducing Risks Center, or the BAR Center, that has an appropriation of $5 million that is available through the end of fiscal year 26. That is what you'd find in the normal larger spreadsheet. But looking at this spreadsheet, you can see that in the third column over, which is titled percent or dollar cap, that it was given, that the Minnesota Department of Education was given a cap of 3% or $150,000 to use for administrative purposes to administer this grant funding and review how the BAR Center was using those funds. Then, as you can see, it's just split out by biennium. So fiscal years 24 through 25, then fiscal years 26 through 27, and fiscal years 28 through 29. For the BAR Center, you can see that they used 3,000, that MDE, I should say, used 3,000 in fiscal year 24, and they still have the authority to use 147,000 in fiscal year 25. We're currently in fiscal year 25, so that year isn't closed out yet, for that total of 150,000. Now, That is the basic idea of how you read this spreadsheet. This isn't exactly a precise science for fiscal years 24 through 25. I reviewed the bill language that was chapter 55 of 2023 and then chapter 115 of 2024 for administrative set asides and specific administrative funding. But then I'm going to direct you to the last page of this spreadsheet. In one of the footnotes, it says that Minnesota Statute 16B.98, subdivision 14, establishes that unless otherwise stated, agencies may retain 5% of an appropriation for named grants and 10% for competitive grant programs. So sometimes an appropriation or a program does not have administrative funding specified for it, but it would fall under the purview of Minnesota Statute 16B.98, subdivision 14. So I just want to highlight that for you there. Before we go further, I would like to point out a few appropriations that are a little different here. Line 4 is the Career and Technical Education Emergency Medical Services course grants. And you can see that this is an instance where 16B.98 applies. Most of the time, there was an effort to put in specific language to reserve a different percentage of administrative funding or a different dollar cap. And then on line 8, the achievement and integration aid, you do not typically see administrative funding lines in aid programs, but this is an aid program where school districts are allowed to calculate 100.3% of their expenditures, and then that 0.3% is retained by the Department of Education for administrative purposes to administer this program. And so the dollar amounts you see there are sort of reflective of that 0.3%. The formula, of course, can't be as simple as that, but that's the general idea. There are a few exceptions to that rule. Otherwise, the only other thing to point out would be that until line 82, all of these administrative set-asides or carve-outs are just calculated from a larger amount. But once you get to line 82, the Department of Education, the state agency area, this is where most of those appropriations are attributable to operating funds, to some form of administrative funding. And so that's where you see those larger chunks of money. And I found this data using the statewide integrated financial tools that are available to legislative fiscal analysts such as myself. It's a statewide system that's operated by the executive branch where they do their accounting, basically.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. And so with that, members, if you have any quick technical questions on the spreadsheet or anything Ms. Beckel covered, now would be a good time while I ask the department to come up. Oh, I'm sorry, you have other documents. Excuse me. I'll let you keep going. So hold your questions and I'll thank you.
Okay.
My apologies. And before I go that, Representative Kwan, we do have, do you want to, I can pause the committee for a second if you want to find a spot at the table. Are you good?
My knee is bothering me, okay. So I'm fine here.
Just double check. Very good.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to pause if there are questions on the general fund spreadsheet. But
and I can do it. Any questions on the general fund spreadsheet? Okay, moving on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second spreadsheet I'm going to go over in the actual body of the spreadsheet, so the first line, second column says MDE, non-general fund, non-federal fund, administrative funds. So we were looking at the general fund spreadsheet, Now we're shifting over to other funds that are not the general fund or the federal fund, as you might guess from the title. And this is something that I also got from the statewide integrated financial tools from their EPM data warehouse. So basically it's where you can go to access any variety of accounting and accounts, revenues, expenditures, et cetera. This seeks to show only the administrative funding attributable to these appropriation IDs. When I say appropriation IDs, what is that? Well, take, for example, look at line 2. It says E370081, Education IDC. So the E370081 is an appropriation ID. Then the name next to it is the appropriation long description in the system. And that's the Education Indirect Cost Accounting. So you know that the state basically bills itself and pays itself. So this is the payments to the Department of Education. But the Department of Education also, of course, pays other agencies for work that they do for them. One thing that is important to point out with this spreadsheet is that these are in real dollars. They're not in thousands. So the first spreadsheet you saw, that was in thousands. This spreadsheet is just in dollars. And this is less precise, I would say, because previously, in the other spreadsheet, I used session law and statute to try and determine all of the administrative funding. So just sifting through the available literature. This, however, I used an accounting code to limit the Minnesota Department of Education's accounts to accounts that looked to me as though that they were attributed to operating. And then I could separate those out into payroll and non-payroll costs. And I can talk more about my methodology if anyone wants to hear, but probably not. I'll draw your attention now to line 1. This shows the beginning of the miscellaneous special revenue fund. This is coded 2000. Line 21 shows the other miscellaneous special revenue fund. That's coded 2001. Typically, you do see that the 2000 fund is just a regular special revenue fund account, and the 2001 account is a revolving state account, but not always. Then if you flip the page over, you'll see on line 32, 2403, the gift fund. So these are gifts that the state receives from outside entities. This could include grant receipts, I believe. And then line 39 shows miscellaneous agency funds that don't seem to fit in any other category. And then there is one other category, but that's just payroll clearing. So there's never anything in it because it's cleared. That is the second spreadsheet, and I will go on to our third spreadsheet here, which is...
And Ms. Beckel, just for the committee, can you, how do you, when you use the words revolving, and we just define those terms, so everyone understands.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, so an example of a revolving fund would be one where... the state would appropriate funds and then expect to see funds coming back in. So I have more experience with this with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, but if there was a loan program, the state would appropriate the funds or grant the monies out of this revolving fund and then expect to receive those funds back to that same fund. In education, obviously, loans aren't as much of education's purview. So here you just see some larger programs that have consistently larger amounts of money that they will receive from the state and then distribute out to individual grantees, such as the Grow Your Own Early Childhood Educators account or the Early Learning Scholarship account.
Very well. Okay.
The next spreadsheet is titled Federal Funds to MDE Attributed to Agency Operations. I use the same methodology as the second spreadsheet for this spreadsheet. This one is exclusively federal funds. And there are a lot of acronyms, so I'll just direct your attention as well to the acronyms for MDE, Federal Administrative Funding List. That's also in your packet. So if you are running into any where you can't quite determine what that appropriation long description is indicating, hopefully that acronym list will be helpful. And one thing to note with both the second and third spreadsheets, I show one column for fiscal year 24 that is broken into three columns of non-payroll, payroll, and total. One column for fiscal year 25 that's broken into non-payroll, payroll, and total. And then I show one column of complete total for fiscal years 24 and 25. And those are the spreadsheets I've prepared, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Any questions from members on those three? All right. Is that all? Do we have any more? All right.
One quick question.
Okay. Chair Joaquin, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Beckel, is this last chart that you mentioned that you went over for federal funds to MDE, is this in thousands or not, or real dollars?
I'm sorry, Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, Representative. Yes, this is also in just dollars, not in thousands of dollars.
Thank you.
Is that all? Very good. Okay, and members, you have a couple more documents in your packets. One of them is the employee summary data. And then the other one is the job classification, correct, the MDE staff and job classification. So trying to provide you with as much information as we can for the conversation. And so with that, if there's no further questions, thank you, Ms. Beckel, as always, fantastic. And just if you would take 2 seconds, can you explain to the members on the committee when they do a check-in with you or request information from you, what's the difference between checking in with you versus checking in with Mr. Strom and the sources of that information?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you are looking for information on the statewide funding concerning education on a statewide level, I'm definitely your person. I can get you a variety of reports, et cetera, on the statewide education funding. If you are looking for that specific information related to your school district, often referred to as the RUNS, Mr. Strom is your person.
Very good. Thank you for that distinction.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Strom.
If I could also add, Ms. Beckel is the contact person for fiscal notes as well. So any fiscal note question should go through Ms. Beckel.
Very good. Thank you. And as we unpack all this, I think the distinction of the source is very important. All right. Thank you, Ms. Beckel. I'll ask the department if you could please come up. And thank you again for being here. And we have, make sure I get these right, I have four names, Mr. Uni, Ms. Graff, Ms. Hand, and Mr. Farnhorst. Did I just pronounce that correctly? Okay, very good. Okay, who would like to begin?
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to start.
Okay.
All right.
Please state your name and for the record and begin, please.
Sounds great. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephanie Graff, and I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. We're happy to be here with all of you today. As you all are discussing the work that we do at MDE and the fiscal side of what it looks like to really support students and families and educators. So thank you for the opportunity. At MDE, as you know, we're really focused on ensuring that every child has access to a high-quality education. It's the work that we do. We serve over 850,000 students across the state, as well as provide leadership and support for communities and libraries in every single corner of Minnesota. MDE provides direct support for teaching and learning. We provide guidance and technical assistance for schools, as well as a significant responsibility for fiscal oversight, accountability, and monitoring of the programs and funding that we administer. Our agency is responsible for over $11 billion in education aid and grants each year. Federal funds, just for awareness, comprise around 10% of the total education budget, and about 90% of the total education budget comes from the state. When we look specifically, I know we're going to talk a little bit more about our agency today. When we look at MDE's operating budget, we are at about 60% federally funded and 40% state funded, though this does shift slightly kind of from year to year. I think the documents that you all had an opportunity to hear about today really demonstrate the breadth and the depth of the good work that MDE does to support students and families. So we appreciate the opportunity and the discussion, and even just to share for a few minutes from our perspective about the federal administrative funding, our state operating and administrative funding, and our special administrative funding as well. I'm joined here today by Chief Operating Officer Patty Hand, our Agency Finance Director Sean Fonhorst, and our Government Relations Director Adosh Uni as well. I'm going to turn it now over to our Agency Finance Director Sean Fonhorst.
Mr. Fonhorst.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representatives. My name is Sean Fonhorst. I'm the Agency Finance Director at the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you for having me. I plan to share a short presentation sharing some context for the funding documents we've discussed today. Adding first that MDE closely aligns its budget to its commitment to equity. Regarding the federal funds spreadsheet you walked through, these awards are a key funding source for MDE. Federal funds directly support priority MDE programs benefiting Minnesota students and educators. Title, IDEA, and child nutrition programs are among the largest. MDE spends about 15% of its $1.4 billion federal budget on employee compensation and other agency operating costs. The remainder is spent on aids and grants. Overall, about 10% of the education budget comes from federal sources. Accounting conventions greatly affect how federal administrative spending is reported between payroll and non-payroll. For example, on line 73 of your federal funds spreadsheet, it shows nearly $28 million in administrative expenses. However, that money is actually almost entirely a COVID-era program for non-public schools. That funding is used to directly reimburse schools for eligible purposes. Similarly, other lines include large vendor contracts needed to meet federal requirements, including for state assessments, monitoring, and technical support. Moving on to the general fund administrative budget spreadsheet, MDE has appropriated various operating budgets as well as administrative carve-outs for grants and other programs. When grant programs include administrative funding, those appropriations are used for staff time and software, which allows us to closely follow the requirements of the Office of Grants Management. It is used for time actually spent on the grant, and any unused amounts are then sent out to grantees. The governor's operating adjustment recommendation will allow MDE to continue providing high-quality services despite rising costs for payroll and other purchases. The governor's recommendation represents about a 2% annual increase to MDE's base operating budget. Looking ahead, MDE is focused on good governance, efficiency, and supporting programs providing the greatest benefits to students and educators. We are constantly seeking out efficiencies in our work. MDE staff are trained in efficient contracting, procurement, and program monitoring. And we are all also looking to take steps like hosting more events in our building, reducing costs for external meetings and conferences. Lastly, I'll talk a little bit about how MDE utilizes special revenue funds for its more unique funding sources. You'll see on line 2 of the other fund spreadsheet a line for IDC. MDE is reimbursed by the federal government for many of its indirect costs supporting its federal programs. This includes a portion of finance and human resources salaries and basic IT support and maintenance from MINUTE. This budget is then used to cash flow those same expenses to the next reimbursement. Usually there's a gap of 1 or 2 years. Additionally, MDE receives competitive awards and gifts from external partners to support the agency's priorities. For example, in March 2024, MDE was awarded a grant from the Sauer Family Foundation for a restorative practices project, and that's on line 10. Lastly, MDE partners with other state agencies through interagency agreements. And when we do that, we often utilize these special revenue funds to...
1 second. Is that for us?
Sorry.
Okay, sorry, go ahead. I thought maybe that was one of our remote people.
Absolutely. Just about ready to wrap up. Lastly, MDE partners with other state agencies through interagency agreements, and we use those special revenue funds to budget for those types of collaborative work.
And Mr. Farnhorn, since you brought it up, I'm looking at line 6, the new venture grant. You mentioned line 10, the Sauer family. 12, 13, share our strength, and the 15. Can you or someone just provide a little bit more detail into those grants and how that process works? Is that essentially you're a grantee on those? Is that correct? Is the Department of Education?
Well, I can start by talking specifically about how the process for the Sauer Family Foundation grant works.
And which line is that, line 10?
That's line 10, correct.
Thank you.
So MDE has a team, or essentially a two-person team, that seeks out external funding opportunities and chances to bring money into the state through competitive offerings. They apply for competitive federal awards as well as competitive non-federal awards like this one. When the mission aligns with MDE's work and mission. And so the way that works is after that, the competitive application from MDE is put forward. If we are selected, then we go through sort of a contracting process where we essentially act as the grantee. We bring that money in and then spend it on eligible expenses, which always align with state law as well as the conditions of the grant.
Yep. Very good.
I know there were some other lines you mentioned wanting to talk through.
Representative Bakeberg, follow up on that, to that point.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, MDE staff. Did I hear, and I couldn't hear real well, so could be me, just saying. But did you say there's a two-person team that works on competitive grants for the department to bring money into the department? Did I understand that correctly?
Mr. Chair,
Farnhorst?
Yes, that's correct.
I'm sorry, did you give an answer? I didn't. Go ahead.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Representative Bakeberg.
Has that, the revenue that they are able to get awarded to the department, is that, are they generated enough revenue to cover the cost of their salaries? Or is it, can you comment, and I know we have this document here, and obviously I don't know which ones they are of them, but I just want to make sure that they're covering the cost. I know a lot of school districts will have on-site grant writers, and that's a common question that we have, is we need to make sure that those people are covering the cost to the district, that they're bringing in that revenue. So can you just explain, and maybe you can follow up offline with me specifically, but are they covering their costs is my question.
And Mr. Farnhorst, any clarification on the question, or are you good?
Yes, I could start out by saying I know that they do cover their own cost, and I know by quite a bit, and I can follow up and provide more information exactly how that breaks down.
Thank you.
Sir. Thank you. And Mr. Just a follow-up on Representative Bakeberg's question. Are there any state committees that review this? Is this all done internally through the Department of Education? You mentioned it's in accordance with law. So what other reviewers might be part of that process?
Here?
Mr. Chair, can you clarify the part of the process? Just want to be sure that we're following the question so we can get the right. Yeah.
So if I understand, thank you. So if I understand, you go out and you try to get these grants and then they come back. Who reviews those? Is that all done internally or is there any interface with a state committee or a state legislature, other branches?
Got it. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. You know, I think as we're looking at opportunities for, you know, bringing resources in to support students and schools across the state, there's a variety of ways that we would partner, and particularly with other agencies. I think, you know, as far as sort of internal process, I would defer to our agency finance director as well. But I don't know, Adosh, too, if you have.
Mr. Ruiz.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, Adosh, Director of Government Relations. That's a good question. I don't know if we have the answer, but that's probably something we could follow up with MMB, because I imagine whatever applies to the Department of Education would apply enterprise-wide. So happy to follow up with our colleagues at MMB to provide that information.
Good. And that's helpful. I mean, as our role, it's, you know, we're going to get questions. So it's helpful for me to say, yep, I had heard about that. I was aware of it. This is their process versus I don't know. So Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I guess I think there's maybe some questions, ambiguity about like what this role is, but I also wanted to ask another side of this. I know often the Federal Department of Education releases competitive grants for LEAs and states to apply for. So I'm just curious if this grants office that we have questions about would use those folks to apply for these federal competitive grants, and was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that.
And Ms. Graff, if you would want
to start. Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question, and absolutely, you know, this is what these folks do, is they look for, and I think maybe similar to Representative Bakeford, I don't want to speak for you, but what school districts would do, right, is look for federal or state or local opportunities for bringing in grant funding to support our work. And so oftentimes those, you know, may come from the federal government. They may come from, you know, maybe foundations, you know, or outside organizations, you know, but that's exactly what they would do, is they would seek out those opportunities, you know, thoroughly kind of consider those in partnership, right, with others, and then think about what that looks like to apply. And that takes some capacity, right, for us to be able to apply for those opportunities and bring that revenue in. And then it also comes with support when we do receive the grant awards, for monitoring, right, and oversight and support for that work as well. So the short answer is yes, that's precisely what that team would do.
Representative Lee, good question. Any follow-up? Very good. Okay, I'll turn it back over to the test fires. Did you have more? You didn't get through your whole slide presentation, did you? I think I short-circuited you.
So. Mr. Chair, we're happy to take any additional questions, but I think that does conclude our short remarks.
So if you're at the end, then I think I'll start opening the list up for questions. So with that, members, how is your time? Representative Green.
Yeah, hi, thank you, Chair. I have a follow-up question to the grant conversation. So if we were to have more grant writers on staff, would that open up more opportunities, or do you feel like the staff that is there exhausts all the opportunities that are there to apply for?
Ms. Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thanks for the question. You know, as we think about our work, these folks are incredibly valuable, right, to be able to bring in resources and provide, you know, the capacity to go through the application process and what that looks like. You know, I think I'd want to go back and make sure I'm thinking about Representative Bakeford's question too, of making sure that we're really intentional if there is additional capacity and staffing that comes with a cost, right? And that we would want to make sure that those opportunities, whether that's federal or foundation, right, are there to make sure that that would be a worthwhile cost for our agency. So I'm going to think about that a little bit. You know, would three be better, right? Or would four, or is two really meeting our needs? We know that right now they're incredibly valuable, but would want to really think deeply about potential for bringing additional folks on.
Representative Green, follow up.
Yeah, great. No, thank you. I know in the district that I represent in Edina, we've been able to, you know, apply for grants, and it is well paid off for that work. But we have that conversation a lot as a school board, like, do we invest in more opportunities to get more opportunities, and that kind of, you know, level. So that's it. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question actually about one of your slides of the the 10 commitments to equity. This would be more general, I guess. I'm just wondering how these are practically applied. For example, prioritize equity. Does that mean in your grants you're prioritizing the ones you're seeking, or in sending out the money from grants? And I guess I don't know what that these mean. How do they look in practicality? You don't have to go over all of them because we don't have time, but maybe like number one, prioritize equity, and then number 10, give students options. What does that look like in practicality?
Ms. Graff.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, thank you for the question. You know, I think as we think about this slide, we think a lot about access and opportunity for students and making sure that every single student across the state, regardless of where they live, right, and what their background is, has an opportunity to learn and thrive and have incredibly caring and qualified educators in front of them, that it doesn't matter, right, who you are and what family, you know, the household, right, that you come from. And so that's really, when we talk about prioritizing equity, right, that's really what we're talking about. And thinking about choice and options and the importance of having choice and options for students, whether that's coursework, whether that's, you know, the robust options for enrollment in school that we have in Minnesota for families to be able to make a choice. And again, making sure that the best learning environment is provided to every single child, regardless of background and where they live.
Thanks.
Very well. Follow up, Representative Bennett?
Yep, are you good? Thank you.
Representative Bakeberg, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've got a few different questions, so just kind of hang with me. Can you guys, and I'm thinking about this from conversations that I've had with school districts across the state, and just questions about where they're at funding-wise and some of the concerns, frankly, with the governor's proposal and shifts to schools. So this is kind of where, just to frame that. So if you can think back to the start of the 2023 session, how many FTEs did the department have at that time?
And Ms. Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bakeberg, thank you for the question. I don't have that in front of me. We're absolutely happy to follow up how many FTEs we had at the start of the 2023 session.
Okay.
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that it was around 435. Does that seem accurate?
Ms. Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure. It certainly could be, and we'll get the number as soon as possible today. Yeah. Thank you.
Ms. Representative Baker.
And my next question is, can you recall what your annual budget was during the at the start of the 23-24 session?
Ms. Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know if any of my colleagues have that, but I'm not sure that we have that specific dollar amount. Again, more than happy to follow up with specific staff, specific, you know, operating budget. Yeah.
Representative Bakeberg.
So it's my understanding that it was about $39 million. My next question is, how many employees currently does MDE have?
Ms. Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have the sheet on the staff here in front of, but I think you all, I think it's here. It was in the material, so I'm going to find it. 400 and something. I know. it's here. Yeah. Let me find it for you. Let me find it for you. Where is it? Because I do know that we have this one. According to this document, it does look like as of December 13th, there were 475 employees.
Representative Bakeberg.
And the current budget. Do you have the current budget for the department as of today?
Ms. Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, is it in these materials? I'm not sure that I have the current budget. I think I might know where you're going, but I do want to make sure if we do have it that we're able to provide.
And
it.
Representative Bakeberg, you're asking for the payroll number?
Payroll number.
And
yes.
The other thing I was going to say is, Representative Bakeberg, it might be helpful just to tell them what the number is that you have and get them to confirm it.
Yes, that good point. So from my understanding, it's about $49 million. So I think it's pretty obvious where my point is going on this. But at the start, and I'll just tell you what the numbers are based off of my research. But at the start of the 23 session, there were about 853,000 students enrolled in schools across Minnesota. Right now, we're at about 850,000 based off of my research. And then I think you said that at the beginning too, Assistant Commissioner Graff. So we had some significant restructuring in the last legislative session, in the 23-24 session, where we started a new department called the Department of Children and Families. Can you talk about the shift of staffing from the Department of Education to the Department of Children and Families?
And to the testifier, Ms. Graff.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, thanks for the question. We did have, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families that was established, I believe out of the 2023 legislative session, and a period of transition where not only MDE, but also, DHS and other agencies were able to think about what it looks like to bringing staff into that new department to really be a place that serves children, youth, and families. At MDE, that included a good portion of our early learning services division, as well as some of our central services staff, I will say, right? Just a few, but primarily our early learning services division. We do still have at MDE an early education unit. It's much smaller, but there's really that strong partnership and coordination as we think about early learning opportunities and the important transitions into kindergarten and elementary school. And so we did have a number of staff. I can get you that number that I believe it was. It was last summer that transitioned over to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and still really have close coordination and cooperation and partnership with that agency.
Representative Bakley. Yeah.
So if you could just, and really this is for anyone, what I'm really frankly struggling to understand is how we stood up a new agency, responsibilities shifted to that new agency from the department, The department budget grew by $10 million, approximately. Staffing grew by about 36 full-time employees. And then we have additional asks. This is all happening while our school districts are being crushed right now. I mean, we've heard it, and it's all of our districts. Two of my districts I know of are cutting. So help me understand how we have continued growth in government, but our school districts are being crushed with the burdens that we put on them.
And I apologize, Deputy Commissioner, I didn't read my own writing, so I should be using your title. Deputy Commissioner Graff, go ahead.
It's great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Absolutely. What you are talking about is something, that is certainly front of mind. And as we think about the shift of the Department of Youth and Families, one thing that I didn't note that I do want to just be sure to note is the role of MDE still, in particular with our finance systems, in continuing to be the flow-through agency for the resources that are provided to the early learning programs that shifted to DCYF. And so, while the some of those programs kind of from a programmatic perspective shifted over, we still play a really significant role. And we did this because we didn't want, we wanted a smooth and seamless transition, particularly for school districts. And we had those conversations with superintendents and business managers, and they said, leave the finance systems the same, right? Because we want this to be smooth. And so I think that's really important as we think about our role and potentially as you consider and look at costs, right? And administrative responsibility that MDE still does play in those programs that shifted.
Representative Bakeford.
I'll just be very pointed in how do we as representatives answer to our school districts when they're cutting and the department is growing their budget?
I'll leave that as a comment. Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Did you want a question for that?
No, I'm good.
We'll leave it out there. And I want to thank the members for the respectful tone and great conversation. Chair Joachim.
Yes, thank you. Actually, this has to pertain. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It has to pertain more to how the federal dollars, when they come in, are used as staff, because I know you can have whole divisions that have federal dollars, and that's why you might see an influx in staff, because you've gotten a grant to do and do something. I know that happens a lot in Health and Human Services. I think their whole epidemiology grants department is funded by federal dollars. So do you have some of those, some of the increase in the funding or staff, has that come from federal dollars or left because of federal dollars?
Deputy Commissioner Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, thank you for the question. Yeah, and I think it connects back to our conversation earlier about having folks that are actively seeking out federal or other resources, right, that can really support good work for students. And so I do think, you know, as we look at our agency, we would be able to certainly be able to see a need for some of the increased staffing that has come with providing those supports through the federal resources that we've been able to seek out and secure, right? And so I do think that I don't have example, like, you know, specific number, but I do know that there's examples of where, you know, that certainly has occurred in addition to some of the state investments, right, that we've had as well. So I think that's a really important piece to consider, and I appreciate you bringing that up.
Chair, you a keen follow-up?
No, not right now, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
With that, Representative Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question. I don't come from an education background like Representative Bakeberg and so many others do, but just something that came to my attention as you're going through the packets here. If you could give me some clarity on a couple things. One, and I'm looking at the job classification sheet here, and you've got, and I'm just going to pick on education consultant number 3. There's 154 of them on my list. One, I don't know what their role would be. That's one part question. What is the role of an education number 3, consultant number 3, because you have 1, 2s, and 3s. And then in addition to that, why is there so much variation in their compensation? If they all do the same role, why is the discrepancy? And there's, I mean, it varies from 94,000 to, I think, 117,000, somewhere in there. Why is the variation in the compensation? And what is the role of an education consultant number 3?
And just to remember, thank you, Representative Lawrence. Remember to come to the chair. Would you like Deputy Commissioner Graff to answer that?
Oh, yes, yes. This is the
Deputy Commissioner Graff.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I appreciate the question. You know, I think as and maybe just a little context as you're kind of looking at the staffing and compensation plan, I think as we consider this, we, you know, like, actively consider this as really a tool to attract the very best talent, right, to the state, just as other employers do, and ensure that our staff have opportunities to grow professionally, right, and really be successful. Some of that may be why within a job classification like Education Consultant 3, there's an opportunity for job growth within that classification, right, for folks. And so some may have a lower salary, and as they grow based on years of service and based on a potential complexity of kind of and scope of work that they do, that salary may increase, commiserate with the deliverables of the work. And so, you know, the state classification system, I will admittedly say, is not something that I am an expert in. I know our HR team works very closely with MMB, and they are kind of the hub of HR, of course, as you know, across state government on the classification specifications, you know, and the accompanying compensation and the determination of those pieces. So that's our agency that is our really kind of key partner in this work.
Representative Lawrence, follow up.
Yep, Mr. Chair, just follow up question. And I didn't, maybe I missed it in the commentary. What is the role of education consultant number 3? Are they in the district? Are they just in the department? What is their role? Are they on? What do they do? You know, what is their role? So, Mr. Chair, and Deputy, for Deputy.
Yep, Deputy Commissioner Graff.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. Yeah, you know, and again, happy to get you kind of the specifics. There is a specific definition of sort of what this is. But an education, you know, consultant 3 could be somebody that works in a variety of program areas across the agency, delivering services and support to schools. And so this could be somebody who works, for example, in supporting students with disabilities, right, and programs around, you know, special education. This could be somebody, for example, that works with advanced coursework in high school and what that looks like to design programming in high school and course options and choice, right, for students and families, for rigorous coursework in high school. It could be somebody who's an expert in career and technical education and is working with industry folks across the state to bridge partnerships with school districts and business, right? And so I think there's a variety of places, and happy to, if there's a specific area representative that you're interested in, more than happy to follow up and provide more information.
Representative Lawrence.
Mr. Chair, and for Deputy Chair, I guess if it isn't too much trouble, I guess I'd like to request a job description. And maybe on more than one. Some of these I think I can understand pretty clearly, but especially when I look at these education consultants, just more description as far as job description is what their role is. So at some point in time, if we could get that back to the committee, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Lawrence. And just for clarification, that when you use the word consultant in the job description, is that just the job description title, or is that the W-2 versus the 1099?
Mr. Chair, and I'm now, I appreciate you following up, because I think there was a question of, is it a contractor in a district, or is it, and so thank you for coming back to that. I didn't mean to miss that in my response. That is a, it says consultant, but it also could be synonymous with like specialist or coordinator, right? But it is an MDE, that is an MDE employee.
Very good. And Deputy Commissioner, anybody, do you have any 1099s, or is there any off the sheets that we don't, that might be in other areas? Do you work with independent contractors, or is it all contained within MDE? Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I do believe there are places where we do work with vendors or contractors, and happy to follow up and share a little bit more if that's helpful on sort of where. But sometimes we do need to tap outside for expertise, right? And to deliver, you know, maybe goods or services that we don't have the folks to do, or maybe we're not best positioned, right? And so we do leverage those partnerships when that makes the most sense.
Very good. Very helpful. With that, we're going to go to Representative Sensor Muir, remote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Representative Sensor Muir.
Thank you. So I think this question is for MDE. I want to focus in on the federal funds. So I know one of the things that districts across our state are facing, and certainly my district of Minneapolis is facing this, is the loss of the ESSER funding, the COVID funds. We know that schools and school districts had those funding for 4 years. We know that school districts all knew that that funding had a time limit to it. But I know that something I'm hearing from schools in my district is that while, you know, the funding has gone away, and in many ways we think that the pandemic is over, the needs that came up from the pandemic are still very much alive in our schools. And I think specifically I hear a lot about mental health needs, the more social supports that all of our students need coming out of that really traumatic time. I've heard from a lot of teachers that the job has just changed. The job is harder than it's ever been before. And so that funding is going away, but the needs are not. So that's already the situation that schools and school districts across our state are facing. And I'm wondering now about the potential instability coming down from the federal government, from the executive orders that froze the grants, then unfroze them. Can you talk about how MDE is bracing for kind of that instability? And, you know, specifically, if 10% of our funding comes from the federal government, what would that mean if that funding was lost? And how much of the funding that comes from the federal government goes directly into our school district? So I know we're having a conversation today about kind of the overhead of MDE as an agency versus what's actually right in the classroom with our schools and our students. So if we lost that 10% of federal funding, kind of what would the impact be on schools, and how much of that would go directly to local schools and local school districts? Thank you.
And Representative Sensor Muir, I heard a lot in there, and I just want to make sure I can direct the right question. The one question that I heard you succinctly say was, is MDE bracing for the instability? Is that the kernel of your question, or would you like to add more to that?
Yeah, and so then if we were to lose that 10% of federal funding, or lose a portion of it, how much of that would be passed on to the school districts? What would the impact be on the local school districts?
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner Graff?
Mr. Chair and Representative Sensor Muir, I appreciate the question, and there is a bit of, you know, uncertainty, and we're really trying to make sure that we're staying up to speed as much as we possibly can, and preparing for, you know, preparing for any potential, you know, kind of federal shifting landscape. And so, you know, I think I did share, and you mentioned it as well, Representative, about 10% of our total education budget across the state comes from federal sources. That's an estimate. And, you know, as we think about the importance of those federal sources, and I think you could talk to school leaders and educators across the state as well, they're incredibly important, right? And so these fund, you know, programs like IDEA, for example, you know, supporting back to, you know, supporting students with disabilities, really from birth, you know, to adult, you know, thinking about our federal nutrition, you know, resources and what that looks like to help the state, actually, bottom line, right, when we think about serving healthy meals to students and making sure all families have access to that. Title I services are pretty expansive and oftentimes the first that people think about when they think about important federal funding streams. And so those would be resources to support low-income students across the state, supports for professional development to have the very best teaching workforce in the nation. Is how I like to say it, supports for English learners, right? And so some of those really critical resources that we know MDE administers from the federal government that do flow directly to supports for students. And so we are hearing, you know, a bit of maybe worry from schools of this would really impact us, right, in a way that wouldn't allow us to serve maybe students that we feel is really critical with the federal resources that have really stably and consistently been there for our school districts for a very long time.
Very good. Representative Sensenmayer, follow-up.
No, thank you. I mean, I just thank you for that answer. I mean, what I heard was that the loss of that funding would hurt special education students, would hurt feeding our kids, would hurt low-income students. And I just know from talks with my district that potential is really, really scary. And so I think it is something that, you know, while we might not have control in this committee over what the federal government does, I think we need to be reckoning with that as we think through the decisions that we need to make this year, because I know that our schools are really, really scared about that instability coming down from the federal government. Thank you.
Very good. And Deputy Commissioner, you had mentioned the 10%, you mentioned the nutrition. How much comes from USDA? Do you have a rough number off the top of your head percentage-wise?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. I don't have that number off the top of my head. Happy, of course, to follow up with the specific there.
Okay, very good. With that, Representative Lee. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Uni?
Mr. Chair, Adosh Uni, Director of Government Relations. I actually do have that number. I was looking up. I knew some of these questions were going to come. So it looks like for the fiscal 24 award, the funds totaled about $431 million for our federal nutrition program.
And Mr. Ernie, was that that's USDA funds?
Yeah, our funds from for nutrition come from the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Correct. Okay, very good. And I have no reason to doubt that. I had heard it was higher, but I like you, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, and I'm not going to play darts with it. So thank you, Mr. Ernie, for the clarification. Mr. Ernie, back to you.
Mr. Chair, if you'll indulge me, I just wanted to provide a little bit more context to Representative Sensenmayer Murray's question, and as it pertains to kind of the focus here around administrative supports to make sure these programs happen. I think one of the important factors, obviously the most important factor, is the resources get to our schools so that they benefit kids in schools and so they learn, we care for their well-being, and all the different purposes of the programs. But one of the critical factors, not only the Minnesota Department of Education, but the U.S. Department of Education, is the expertise that the individuals have to be able to deliver the funds. The relationships that MDE has with the U.S. Department of Education are critical for being able to flow the funds, be able to monitor the programs, and be able to provide the guidance that schools need to implement it on behalf of all of our students. It also comes down to the expertise with IT systems, with finance systems. And so those relationships that we have developed and that we maintain and that we rely on a daily basis are pretty critical to the process of getting the funds to our local education agencies.
Very good. And members, from what you said, Mr. Uni, I just want to add some context from what I'm hearing. When I go back to all the comments, Representative Bakebergs, Representative Sensenmayer, and Deputy Commissioner Graff, you said this succinctly, there is worry. And the worry is coming from all over the place. We're hearing it in our schools. We're hearing it when we see a governor's budget that is suggesting $171 million in cuts. And this is not This is because I think the recognition is things are changing. When we talk about the loss of the ESSER funds, the landscape is changing. And so what I suggest this committee is, as we continue to do this, we have to overturn every possibility to alleviate as much worry as we can and get the school districts through the next 2 years. That is a monumental task, and it's why this conversation is so important. So that's what I'm hearing so far. I think we're all going to be actors in the success of this, but we have to be able to have these honest conversations, and we're well on our way. With that, Representative Lee, keeping us honest.
Thank you, Chair. I hope so. I have a couple questions. I had originally wanted to go back to the conversation we started with Representative Bigberg and the addition of DCYF and kind of like those transitions, but also wanted to loop in the conversation on federal funds. So I wanted to ask specifically about two programs, Head Start and Title I. So with the creation of DCYF, kind of curious where Head Start falls. And then also, you know, what happens if we lose Head Start funding? Because I imagine maybe Head Start is also like really expansive program, right? Head Start actually hires and employs some of the parents of the students, and it also feeds those kids that need it most. And so I imagine it'd fall on both, but maybe MDE would do the programmatic part of education. So I wanted you to maybe talk a little bit more about that transition.
And so... Deputy Commissioner, so if I get your question correctly, you're looking for where the Head Start and Title positions may fall in the responsibilities. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. And then what happens when and we don't happens? Have that money?
Deputy Commissioner Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. And I was wondering what that mouse was. Like, I was wondering whose it was. It is very cool.
Representative Elkins, I would appreciate if you put your name on the list the next time you want to.
It looks like a mouse where you wouldn't get carpal tunnel is what that looks like.
I'm sorry, really Deputy great. Commissioner.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thank you, Representative. Head Start actually is a program that still that was a part of the transition to DCYF. And so DCYF oversees sees the entirety of the program, but just, you know, sort of similar to other, you know, settings where there's early learning opportunities for students, MDE is closely partnering. And you brought up Title I, and there's a close connection between Title I funding and Head Start as well, because Title I resources can be used, right, to support Head Start programs. So that partnership and that coordination, even, you know, in that transition to Head Start, moving over to DCYF has been incredibly important. I think, you know, the impact of not having Head Start, if resources, I don't want to speculate, but, you know, if resources were to go away, would have a drastic, you know, impact on low-income students and young people and families, you know, across the state. So from what we know, the program is in place right now. It's administered through DCYF, and we're keeping a close eye, of course, on any federal action.
Representative Lee, follow up.
Yes, just very quickly. So in my district, I have I lost my one high school due to redistricting, but I have a number of elementary schools, and most, if not all of them, receive Title I funding. I think the question there from the principal and also some of the staff is, you know, if they lose Title I funding, they might have to let go some of the support staff that they've been able to hire. And so just curious if you could talk about the impact of losing federal funds to schools directly, right? Like when we talk about school capacity and being able to deliver what our families need, there's an absolute impact. And so I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about, you know, how these federal funds flow through MDE directly to our classrooms every day.
And Deputy Commissioner, as you're talking about this, if you could also add clarification, when we talk about the Head Start, is that funded directly through U.S. Department of Education or through Health and Human Services federally? If you could just add that clarification.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. I want to get back to you on that. I want to get back to you on that because it is a close, it's so close. Just similar to other programs, it's so closely coordinated. Maybe Representative Bennett wants to... Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, so closely, you know, done in partnership between the two agencies, and I can certainly give other examples of where that is the case. So I want to make sure that we get the right formal answer to you, even though we know it's a close partnership. And you know, as far as Title I resources, you know, Title I Part A is the biggest pot of money that of all the sort of title funding, and that is really focused on supporting schools with high proportions of low income students across the state. And I think, you know, if not every, nearly every school district receives Title I resources. And, you know, there's a whole host of ways that schools, based on local context, local student and family needs, and local educator needs, choose to spend those dollars. And so it could be intervention supports, you know, academic supports for students. It could be the critical work of paraprofessionals to support students alongside teachers, you know, in the classroom. It could be, you know, really important maybe out of school time, you know, work for students that connects back to what students are learning in the classroom. And so there's a whole host of ways, again, based on local context of how districts choose to spend those dollars, that is all done. You asked about how that flows, right? And so that is all done through an application process that every district and charter school submits to MDE, based really strictly on federal prescriptive requirements of Title I programming, and that goes through our grant management system for review and approval. The dollars then are distributed on a reimbursement basis to schools based on them incurring the goods and services.
Representative Lee, follow up.
No, I'm good on that. I mean, my point was just, I know I have elementary schools in my district who have been able to hire paras to do the extra work, right? And they're very worried about that impact on them. I had another question, but maybe I will reserve that to come speak for my second time and let other folks speak. Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And just I appreciate all the conversation as we're trying to get our arms around all of this. Remember, we also do have MDE in front of us, and this is the opportunity to talk specifically about their budget as well. But with that, we'll go to Representative Hill remotely.
Thank you, Chair. I'm hoping you can hear me all right.
We can.
Wonderful. Hey, wanted to just touch in with the department and thank you for being with us here today. If the department can speak to some of the state investments made in the last biennium to support what's come to be known as the cross subsidy language that I'm uncomfortable with. I think it pits different students against different groups of students against each other. But wanted to talk a little bit about those investments and how they're impacting districts. And if there are any new needs emerging that we're seeing in real time that districts are speaking to when it comes to this lack of federal support around the special education funding.
Deputy Commissioner Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. And what we know is that you all, the state, have been able to step in and really fill through the cross subsidy a critical closing of that gap for special education funding for school districts, knowing that the federal government only provides a portion of what the actual real costs are for serving students with disabilities, you know, across the state. I think, you know, we do continue to hear about just sort of the vast needs and maybe increasing needs of providing those critical supports and accommodations for our students with disabilities across the state. And we know, again, that does come with a price tag. And so I know school districts are looking at their budgets carefully and making sure that there's, you know, an opportunity to serve those students in a really fiscally responsible way. But, you know, I do think that that's a place that has been an ongoing conversation of, you know, state and federal partnership in the spending, right, that goes to support our students with disabilities.
Representative Hill, follow up.
Just really quickly, in anecdotally, the different districts that I've had a chance to interface with have talked about the crucial need for those dollars at the federal level, and certainly, you know, they are thankful for the investment made here at the state level. But moving forward, there's ongoing concern that gap is going to continue to widen despite the intentional investments made. And so just wanted to put that question in front of the department to make sure that we're not missing the mark where there are new needs emerging or, you know, if there's information that's going to be important for this committee to understand as we move towards a budget.
Very well. Representative Ingham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, this might be a question more particularly posed to Deputy Commissioner Graff, but I know that there are audit employees that are currently listed within the deliverables that MDE is here sharing with us today, which we're appreciative of. But I want to know, with the governor's budget, it does include more money for FTEs that would particularly go towards auditing or some employee that has audit oversight. My question is, what's the department planning on doing to ensure that those positions are fulfilling their job titles and really preventing or overseeing or just catching fraud before it comes to fruition? Seeing as of June 13th of 2024, the OLA report says that they failed in having to act on warning signs known to the department, did not effectively exercise its authority to hold fraudsters accountable, or was ill-prepared to respond. And so if they're asking for more money to fulfill full-time employees that are solely going after fraud, how do we know that now they're going to do their job?
Very good. Representative Ingen. Deputy Commissioner Graff.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the really, really important question. And, you know, I know that it's been said, you know, recently many times, but I do want to reiterate, at MDE, we believe in accountability, and we are firmly committed to preventing and detecting fraud. And so I do want to just take the opportunity to just say thank you to you all as legislators for really, you know, allowing us to establish in 2023 the Office of the Inspector General. And we did come back, right, in the spirit of continuous improvement in 2024 and really look at additional tools and authorities that may be really critical and needed for our OIG to be able to conduct robust investigations and prevent and detect and intervene with fraud. And so since the establishment of the OIG in 2023, just, you know, a couple of years ago, I think we've made great progress, right? So between then and the end of January, we've received 140 complaints, just to give you some specific numbers, of which 80 are closed and 60 are open investigations right now. And so, you know, constantly looking to improve our oversight and our work around, you know, anti-fraud and waste and abuse at MDE in partnership with all of you. And so you did reference the governor's anti-fraud package. And so there are some resources and steps within that package, some policy pieces, but also, you know, some budget proposals looking at our legal support to make sure particularly our charter school and our nutrition programs have really strong legal support to make sure that they're using every regulatory and enforcement tool in the toolbox, right, in overseeing those programs. And then just really considering the demand of investigations, making sure that our OIG has the capacity needed. And so there is an additional investigator position in the governor's budget as well, so to make sure that we're able to meet the needs and again continue to fight fraud at MDE.
Representative Ingham, follow up.
Thank you. Yeah, I would just reiterate, but telling us that fraud prevention is robust and it's working is one thing. Showing us is another. We don't want to hear about the fraud. We want to be proactive and not reactive with this. And sometimes when we have new positions that are overseeing programs within MDE or that MDE oversees that are reactionary to that fraud with legal counsel, I'm wondering what do we need to ask for next, rather than just the charter or the nutrition programs that have been defrauded. What is the next FTE that's going to be overseeing another aspect of fraud that's coming up down the road? So that would be my closing remarks there. Thank you.
If I could, Deputy Commissioner, so the committees that I sit on as well, Ways and Means, Commerce, we've heard this through all the other ones. I guess one of the things that reassurance that I hear that legislators are looking for is culturally what has changed. You know, when I run organizations, I'm looking at the people, what has changed? What's the mentality? You're asking for budgetary items, you're making requests, but I guess one of the reassurances, like I said, we're looking for here in the legislature is what has really changed? What is the seriousness level? I'm assuming it's there, and I'd like you to have that opportunity to explain to us, you know, is there a new sheriff in town, and what does it look like? Deputy Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I would go back to kind of what I just shared. We do have an office right now that we did not have 2 years ago, and so I would say that is the most sort of critical sort of component that has changed at MDE is having that office. I will say our commissioner has been in place since January of 2023 and has set a tone from the top about accountability and expectations and fiscal oversight and the importance of the Office of the Inspector General being just critical, right, as we think about preventing fraud, waste, and abuse. And so so that's what I would say. I appreciate the opportunity to comment a bit more.
Very good. And if I, and I'm not asking this of you. I just want to give you an example. In Commerce today, we have some changes going on, and the new public safety commissioner, you know, he was very clear. He's like, this falls to me. This is mine. And I think looking for those clear lines of accountability at some point, we've seen lots of commissioner changes. And again, I'm not placing this on your shoulders. I'm just anecdotally what this committee has seen over the last 4 years and those changes. And frankly, a governor who has stuck his hands in the pockets and said, oh, shucks, we'll see if we can figure this out, hasn't boded well. I think there's a level of seriousness that we're all starting to hear in our districts. Doesn't matter where you come from, we're all worried. The term worry continues to permeate. So thank you, Representative Ingen.
Mr. Chair.
The list is growing. Yep.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Oney.
Just, I wanted to add to Deputy Commissioner Graf's remarks. One of the focuses, especially since it came online in 2023 around Office of Inspector General, but we also have gone to great lengths to formalize our Office of General Counsel as well, two of which of the positions Deputy Commissioner Graf mentioned around a legal counsel focused on the charter school sector and a legal counsel focused on the nutrition sector. We also have a general counsel, you know, lead general counsel. We have an assistant general counsel. I think, Mr. Chair, when you bring in what is the culture shift, what is the new person in town or new people in town, new team in town. It's really about formalizing, professionalizing to the greatest extent possible our legal lens towards all the programs that we take. And they work hand in hand with our OIG. Obviously, the OIG is independent, but in terms of being able to provide that assistance so the OIG can do their job, help the different divisions have the conversation with the OIG when that's necessary. But then on the front end, right, being proactive, not reactive, is making sure that all of our divisions have the best advice about statutory interpretation, only at the state level, but at the federal level, and have great training and a great team member who's focused on risk mitigation on the foresight level. Not only reactive, we're always going to have situations where we have to react because that's just the way of life. But on the proactive side, our legal team is really focused on giving our divisions a resource to flow everything through to make sure that they have everything right. We've had legal counsel at the department for years, but this is a very formalized team now that the two of these positions will help greatly in terms of their focus in the harder area and the nutrition area.
Very good. And to that comment, I take those very much to heart. Deputy Commissioner Graf, you know, it's helpful when you give share data like you did, like you've had 80 that you've looked, you know, the absence of information will make it up on our own. So when you can provide the data, that helps us with context a lot. Thank you. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for joining us today. And so what I'm, you know, hearing, and I just heard you, Deputy Commissioner, and you said that since 2023 that you've really been concentrating on fiscal oversight. And so with that, you know, we appreciate that, and yet what we're seeing is an expansion of this agency. And then you also have said that you're focusing really hard on fraud now and that that's a top concern of yours. And so my question just is really simple, is who was fired from the agency from the fraud that happened?
And Representative Altendorf, is your question to Deputy Commissioner Graf?
That's correct.
Okay. Deputy Commissioner Graf.
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you. Thank you for the question. I don't have HR with me, and I just want to be really careful to not talk, you know, publicly in committee from a personnel, you know, perspective. And so I just, you know, I just want to kind of stop there. I've been advised from HR to be sure, right, that disciplinary action and personnel information is not something that I should be speaking to in a committee.
Okay. Representative Altendorf, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just a follow-up question. I mean, so I understand with human resources that you can't give out personal information. So then let me just rephrase that question. Did someone from the agency get fired?
And Deputy Commissioner Graff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm going to go back to my response. I just don't want to misspeak on personnel information or disciplinary action that I shouldn't. That is private information. And so I'll go back, have a conversation with HR, but I just want to be very, very careful to not get into that territory. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Altendorf, follow-up? Okay. Very good. Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. This is just circling back to possibly bring some clarification to the questions that Representative Lawrence had regarding the difference in wage scales for those positions. My understanding is that position is covered under the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, or MAPE. And although the education finance world is a little bit new to me, union contracts are not, and it could be entirely possible that those differences have to do with things like seniority, education, experience, things that were negotiated into that contract that potentially are the reason for that fluctuation within those job classes. Maybe you can we can clarify that.
And Representative Johnson, do you have a succinct question that I can relay?
If they are covered under that collective bargaining agreement, is that the rationale or reason that those things could possibly, the wages could be so different?
Very good. Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. Yes, it could be that it is based on some of those components, seniority and experience and some of those pieces, in addition to the job responsibilities, right, and expanded kind of scope, complexity, and higher level work, right, that could come with it. And so those are pieces, again, that really are tied to our classification system and some of the specific parameters that would be found in the job description, right, and the sort of steps and lanes that come through MMB with our system for classification specifications. But those would be some components that would be potentially considered.
Representative Johnson, follow up.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, agency, for being here. Deputy Commissioner, I know that you're answering a lot of questions, and I really appreciate it. So in this giant book that we have here, I remember I go back to your statement of, the agency is here to make sure that kids are getting a quality education no matter where they live. And in order to do that, we have to have quality teachers, and we have to be able to make sure that our schools are doing what they're doing. Your job is to do that, not overstep the locally elected officials. But out of the 400 and some listed things here, I want to know what we're focused on and how we're prioritizing who we are hiring and what they are focused on. My number one focus, and I'm sure Dr. Clardy and Vernig and some other people here, is literacy. Our kids need to learn how to read, and over half of our kids are not reading at grade level. So how many of our MDE staff are actually focused on literacy, making sure that we're talking to teacher prep programs, that they're holding them accountable? How many of them are making sure that the READ Act is going and getting implemented with fidelity? And how many are making sure that our schools are implementing the READ Act with fidelity? That's a pretty important thing for our schools to be able to focus on. Chronic absenteeism, that's something that I know has been in the news quite a bit in the last, 6 months or so. Representative Bakeberg, Representative Lawrence, Representative Keeler, and I forget the other person, I'm sorry. Oh, Vernon, excuse me, sorry, thank you. We're on that task force there. This is something that needs action now. Out of your 400 and some, almost 500 employees, how many are focused on the urging, pressing matter of addressing chronic absenteeism? We understand that education and oversight of our hundreds of school districts take money. We understand that. No one is debating that, and no one is saying that you shouldn't have money to be able to do your job. We're just trying to make sure that what you're prioritizing is actually MDE's job. And so when we see 500 million you know, education consultants that have no job description, have no ideas of what they actually do. And then we see our reading scores slip, and then we see chronic absenteeism going through the roof. What is MDE doing? How many people are focused on that? And so maybe you don't have the exact totals, and that's what it is. I will tell you that I've tried to look online to see, hey, who's my point person? Who's the person? And I see contact MDE at literacy.org or something like that. Not helpful. Not helpful. I can't find a person, find a name, find a department that I can even contact. And so I guess, Mr. Chair, if I can boil down my question, how many of the employees that we have listed here are focused on literacy and chronic absenteeism for starters? Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Mueller, for boiling that down, because my broad thing was Representative Mueller has concerns. But if you can go directly to her question, Deputy Commissioner Graff, that'd be helpful.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, and I just first appreciate you bringing up two incredibly critical areas with the READ, you know, with focused on literacy and making sure that every child can read at grade level in order to continue to learn through their education and thrive, right, as citizens as they get older. And so just appreciate you bringing that up. And I know you continue to do that. And then, you know, around absenteeism, right, as well. And I know just incredibly appreciative of the legislative task force and the ongoing conversations right now around what we can do to make sure that we have solid data, solid, you know, opportunities for coordination in thinking, you know, the cross sector and kind of complex nature of meeting the needs of students and making sure that they're regularly attending school. And certainly kids can't learn if they're not in school, right? And so I know there's really important conversations that are occurring right now around absenteeism too. And both of these have been key areas at MDE. Happy to give you specific staff accounts, right, that are working in these areas. I'd say, you know, some of these are cross-cutting, like absenteeism work. You know, that is cross-cutting. There could be folks in special education that are working with our data team, right, that might be working with family engagement and, you know, programs to make sure that there's those good connections with families, right, and connection also with, you know, like Department of Human Services, right, and other agencies too. And so sometimes the position, you know, the nature of positions, especially when we talk about something like absenteeism, there's many people across different teams that really have their hand in playing a role to make sure kids are regularly attending school. But I think you're bringing up just a whole host of sort of wonderings as you look at the staff list, right, and maybe others are as well, about what do all these folks do. And so I just, Mr. Chair, I would welcome an opportunity for us to provide, you know, an overview of the work that we do and give, you know, kind of specific information about, again, the complexity and the breadth and the depth of the Minnesota Department of Education and the good talent that we have to serve students, families, and communities across the state.
Representative Mueller, follow up. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Appreciate the answer. I would say, as you said, I appreciate you being willing to follow up with me and giving me more specifics. I would say that if the purpose of MDE is to provide guidance and helpful resource for our schools, having suggestions about having staff lists is kind of a basic thing. And so I feel like it shouldn't be difficult for anyone to be able to go and find the information that they need. Like we shouldn't, teachers are educated human beings. Parents are often very educated and motivated human beings to find information. And if I can't find it, you know, as a legislator who has time, I don't have children. Right now, I don't have children, but I don't have students, so those are my children. But, you know, I'm here. My job is literally to do oversight of MDE. And if I can't find that information, a busy teacher, a busy parent is also not going to be able to find that information. And if your actual goal is to be a resource to our local schools and to our parents, then, I mean, it's pretty basic and it should have some work. And I should be able to go and say, who's the point person for literacy? Who's the point person for this? How can I talk to an actual human being? I have never been in administrative work, but I know Representative Bakeberg has and still is, and I also hear from many of my local school districts about how difficult it is to actually come together and have a partnership relationship with MDE. And part of it is because of this. You know, this isn't helpful. This isn't helpful. This is not something that people are able to use and have very user-friendly ideas. I'm doing research for the READ Act right now, and that stuff is buried. I mean, I can look at READ Act, but the stuff that I'm looking for is really, really buried. And so, I mean, and it just shouldn't be. So more transparency, more accessibility, and I really look forward to your follow-up. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. And members, great discussion. We're down to the last 15, and I have Representative Vernig, Bennett, Green, Hudson, Lee, Quam, Reimer, and then I'll be going to Bakeberg and Chair Joachim to close up. But if you need to get your question in, ask your question very succinctly so we can get through these. So, Representative Vernig.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Deputy Commissioner. It kind of piggybacks off of what Representative Mueller was saying. Could you, and you probably don't have the numbers today or now when you get back to us, tell us how many staff, for example, through the READ Act or the Regional Centers of Excellence or through special ed, who are funded through MDE but are employed through other agencies. I don't know if there are other programs like that as well. To Mr. Bakeberg's, Representative Bakeberg's point, you know, schools are shrinking, but departments are, the agencies are growing, whether that's through service co-ops or through MDE. If the number is 475, what does the broader scope look like? So that, you don't have to answer today. If you could get back to us, that'd be great.
And Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vernig, absolutely happy to get back and provide that information. Thank you.
And we should all follow Representative Vernig's lead of the nice, succinct question. Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question actually had to do with some conversations earlier, but I'll still ask it. Excuse me. I am wondering, because I'm a little bit confused, I'm hearing discussions about, you know, what if we cut Title I funding federally? What if school meals were cut and so on? Is there like a proposed list I have missed federally that specifically says, you know, they're proposing to cut certain things? Because I've seen the governor's list. He's got a list of items he's going proposing to cut for funding. But have I missed a federal list aside from being floated around closing the Federal Department of Education, which may or may not mean cutting of funding? That much of that, a lot of funding comes from other agencies, and then it could always be shifted. So am I missing a list that's out there with federal proposed cuts of education items like Title I?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. I have not seen a specific list either. I think, you know, what we are hearing is conversation around uncertainty. And worry, right, Mr. Chair? You used that word, or we did. We used that word, you know, a little bit. And I think, you know, some of what we've seen reported is creating some of this. I think folks are, you know, educators talk, school leaders talk, and network. And I think there's just a lot of questions, you know. And so while I don't know that I either have seen a list, I think there's a lot of questions. And what is the shift? Is there a shifting landscape? What might this look like? A little bit of uncertainty, right? And I think that's the sentiment that I think I'm hearing most from folks.
Thank you.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you. And just a comment then, and thank you for that, because I was afraid I missed some important information like that. But I think as legislators, we need to be careful not to feed into fear-mongering. Obviously, there is uncertainty with things being floated out there with the department. Cutting bureaucrats doesn't necessarily mean cutting funding for our schools. So I would just encourage us to encourage school leaders to contact their federal representatives and just say, hey, if you're going to close the Department of Education federally, you know, make sure we still have Title I funding. That's important. Or make sure, but we shouldn't be feeding into the fear-mongering and just guessing, because there is no list except the governor's list and those things we should be talking about and addressing. So thank you.
Representative
Green. Mr. Chair Bennett, one of the things I mentioned is I think the uncertainty
also comes from the Federal Office of Management and Budget memo that went out that was an attempt to freeze all federal funds and grants. And I think that is what created the uncertainty and confusion. Obviously, then there was a backtrack on that and the funds continued to flow, but that's where most of our questions came from. We did hear about some systems accessing those federal funds closing off and then turning back on, which created more confusion. So I don't think that there's a specific list other than to say if it was a federal freeze of all, the proposed federal freeze of all funding flows, the list would be all-encompassing. So I think, is it all-encompassing? Is it not all-encompassing? I think there's just a lot of uncertainty, and then that generates a lot of questions from the field to us, I think from a lot of decision-makers around IDEA, around title, around nutrition funding. So that's just kind of what we're dealing with. No specific list, but I think just the OMB memo created a lot of confusion.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, Representative Mike, and thank you for that. And I want to make sure I was not accusing you all of fear-mongering. I'm not. And not even our members. I just think we have to be careful how we do things because there is no set proposed list. So thank you very much.
Representative Green, then Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Chair. And I'm actually piggybacking on Representative Hill's comments and then Representative Bennett, what you were just talking about. So my question is in special education and the pipeline of teachers that are needed. We know that is something we've heard from districts all across the state that this is an issue. And this isn't fear-mongering, but I know the University of St. Thomas, private college right down the street, on Friday got a memo that $6.8 million worth of grants and scholarships were canceled. That impacted 185 students that are currently seeking to be special education teachers. And so my question is, within the department, how much collaboration is done with the Department of Labor and Employment? And is there considerations for decisions like this and how we respond? Because that will impact our budget, right? It impacts a lot of the things that are in here. And I know we get money from the federal government and it's in our general fund, kind of feeding that pipeline in different grants and different work. So I just am curious if you have considered that and if there is plans to plan for that kind of impact.
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate you bringing that up. And, you know, there is really close partnership with the Department of Labor and Industry, as you mentioned, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, DEED, and the Office of Higher Education, as we think about meeting the needs of our educator workforce today. And in the context of what you're talking about, particularly where there are shortage areas, right? And so we do hear often about special education teachers being a shortage area. And so we've leaned into that. There was funding actually from the legislature to fund special education pipeline grants, right? To support the pipeline for folks to get credentialed into becoming, you know, special education teachers. There is work specifically with the Department of Labor and Industry around teacher apprentice. I'm just going to kind of give an example, teacher apprenticeship programs. Where there are registered apprenticeship models, there's I'll say increasing interest among school districts to really partner on how we can provide on-the-job paid training for aspiring educators, and a starting point for many has been around special education, knowing that again that's a shortage area with maybe an eye to continue to expand, and that's an example of a partnership specifically with DLI, but there's a whole host, I think, of opportunities as we think about preparing, recruiting, retaining and growing and thriving our workforce, right? Because we also know the data around folks coming into the profession and how many leave, right? And what does that look like for us to really wrap our arms around new teachers too? So I'm probably, Mr. Chair and Representative, giving you a little bit more, but the short answer is those state agency partnerships with DLI and others are incredibly important in the work that we do to support educators.
Mm-hmm. Quick follow-up?
Just quick follow-up. Thank you so much. I appreciate you mentioning the apprenticeship special education programming. I met with the superintendent of the Intermediate District 287 this morning to talk about that and a bill that's coming through. So I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciated in response to Representative Ingen's question earlier regarding concerns surrounding fraud, the focus on distinguishing between being reactive versus proactive. When you list things like the Office of Inspector General and expanded legal team, it occurs to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that those things are kind of inherently reactive. In the fraud prevention committee that we had this Monday, we had a robust conversation with the Office of Legislative Auditor, some great bipartisan commentary regarding the Office of Grant Management, the rules that they come up with, the policies that they draft. And that grant management piece strikes me as really the truly proactive way to get in front of these abuses that we've seen. So what I would like to hear more commentary on is your relationship with OGM and your successes that you've had or your attempts to implement the policies that they have drafted for state agencies and what the shift has been since that report that came out a couple years ago between then and now.
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm going to turn over to our agency finance director to talk a little bit. He oversees, under Chief Operating Officer Hand, the grants team. And so, you know, what I will say is that partnership is close, and those policies have even been sort of strengthened, I will say, in recent years out of OGM. And so I know that coordination with OGM, which is at the Department of Administration, is tight. And we do agree that this is a way on the front end. We're not just looking in a reactive manner, but in a very proactive manner to make sure that we are implementing those policies with fidelity and we're getting ahead of fraud before it occurs. So I'll turn it over to Sean maybe to share a little bit more, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
And go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. The Department of Education partners closely with OGM on a host of issues. There are a wide variety of OGM policies, procedures, and guidance on state law that really forms the bedrock of how MDE manages its grants, and that flows through to training for all of our grant specialists, the types of pre-award, for lack of a better word, checklist that we do on before each grant goes out, the types of materials we require as part of our risk analysis on any type of grant recipient, and that's baked right into our the software we use for all of these grants. It's something that we do consistently. It's regularly examined within our team and also by external auditors. Office of the State Auditor, OLA, groups like that, and really it's something that is sort of embedded in all parts of our training as grant administrators. I'll also add that I personally, as the agency finance director, regularly will call the Office of Grants Management specifically to discuss issues that maybe I wasn't familiar with to learn how other agencies have handled it, and I found them to be strong partners in everything I do.
Quick follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. Just off the cuff, what are your thoughts regarding the one of the potential recommendations that OLA has come up with, which is creating a statewide kind of universal grant management system that could be used across state agencies?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, that's something that we're actively exploring and having conversations on right now. And so we want to make sure, should that transition happen, we get that right, across state government. We know that at MDE, we've been able to really lean into and have a really effective grant management system. It may be something that other agencies may be able to learn from, but that's an ongoing conversation right now in coordination with many agencies across state government.
Very good. And members, I have... I would like to allow Chair Youakim and Representative Bakeford to close this out. I have Representative Lee, Representative Quam, and Representative Reimer. I would ask that you ask your questions offline, if you can take them right directly to the commissioners. If you have something super pressing, I could allow 1 minute, but I know we're running short on that. So Representative Bakeford, and then I'll go to Representative Youakim and close the comments.
Thank you. I'll just make a couple brief comments. I think, as I look through, as there are other conversations, when I look at the federal funding, the federal funding for Minnesota has actually gone down from 23 to 24 by about $2.4 million, but the state budget has increased. So one of those two things shouldn't be happening. So the reality, and Representative Spencer Murrow brought it up, that districts are facing a cliff because of the choices, frankly, that those districts made about how to spend federal dollars. If they spent those in ongoing expenses, they have to make the choice of eliminating that ongoing expense or reprioritizing and keeping what they had. I don't see that happening from the Department of Education. What I see is a continual growth in the department, and then we are backfilling these positions that were funded by federal dollars. So my challenge to the department is cut your budget the way school districts have to. Because right now in Minnesota, districts are struggling, and across all of our districts, they are going to be cutting. And we are growing the department. That is unconscionable. We cannot do that. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Joaquin. Chair Joaquin, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Different.
So I'd have to agree with Representative Mueller about the website. It is a little complicated to find things, and I'm sure you're working on that. But I know how closely you work with our school districts when they have concerns. I know this because of our absentee pilot project that's going on right now, and their ability to have 12 districts talking to each other, and they've already found something that you've been talking about a long time. It matters what data is going in. And all there's three systems. They're all using and classifying an absent student differently. And that's something I know MDE is looking at as well. I got a little confused. I always did not do well in micro and macroeconomics in college. But if federal funding is going down, then, of course, the state budget has to go up to take the brunt of it away from our districts. That happened with special ed. When IDEA came in the 70s, the federal government promised 40% of the costs. They've never gone above 17. We are attacking that cross subsidy finally because we had some money last year to do it and made that a priority. Because districts, when I started doing advocacy work in 2003, yep, aged myself, our districts' cross subsidy budgets were about 2% of their budget. They're now up to 10 or 12. And we've had to pick up more of the federal share because it's just not coming to our kids. I also appreciate the work our school districts and the department has done around mental health for our students, because between chronic absenteeism and mental health playing a part of that, kids don't make it to school. And they really can't learn if they're not in school. So with that, I just want to say, too, we need to start taking the federal uncertainty seriously. It is already pushed out when we can do our forecast to March 6th instead of February. 80% of Head Start's money comes from federal funds. They still haven't been able to pull down their money from the state agency, even though the courts have put a halt on freezing the grants. The websites are down. 60% of our universal meal funding comes from the federal government. 10% of the whole education budget for the state comes from the federal government. We can't make up that 10% at the state. We can start talking to our congressional leaders, like Representative Bennett said, but we have to do more than that at the state level because that's our responsibility too. So I just want to thank Chair Krisha for having this and having it for a whole hearing so that we could really ask some good questions and get some more understanding. And thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. And I want to thank the members. I can tell you this, and I think we all know this, the worry and the uncertainty is coming from every direction right now. It doesn't matter if you're buying milk and eggs. Doesn't matter if you're trying to educate your kids or get them into college. And what we're hearing is real. And I can tell you this. I know Chair Joaquin and I will be talking a lot, but the solution is going to come from you. It's going to come from the we. And I love the fact that I'm already seeing the conversations across the table. Those good ideas are going to get us to a place where hopefully we can get a solution, and we need a solution. And so thank you very much. I really appreciate the conversation. I really appreciate the openness and to the department and Mr. Uni. You guys, your team has always been very open. So with that, we're running a little bit long, but I do want to give a roadmap for next week. At this point right now, it looks like we will at least have our first bill hearing next week. House File 6 is in our committee possession, and we'll have that one up. And Representative Lawrence, Representative Hill, and Representative Anderson, looks like we're talking about some school safety as well as possibly transportation sparsity. So those are initial ones as we look forward to some conversations that we can have here, and we'll see what else comes through. But I just wanted to give the committee a preview for that. So any quick questions, Chair Joaquin, before just let everyone know, and thank you very much. And with that, we are adjourned until Tuesday, February 18th, 2025.